Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to the Think Orange podcast.
A podcast with ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
Here are your hosts, Dave Adamson and Ashley Bohens.
How's it going, everyone? My name is Dave. As always, I am joined in the Think Orange bunker by my good friend, Ashley.
Hello, friends.
How are you today?
I am wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Now, when I walked into the bunker today, you were still flying high from my singing from last week.
I'll tell you, I've waited a really, really long time for that.
It was worth it, wasn't it?
It was. And I know it was for your wife, and that was so sweet of you.
Thank you for being so excited about my lame singing.
Actually, you surprised me.
Really?
With your talent.
Was I on pitch? Was my pitch okay?
I think so. According to my ears, I'm on pitch.
No, yeah, it's true.
I don't know if that's a helpful measure.
I'll take it. I'll take whatever I can get when it comes to singing. Hey, you know what? Sometimes we need to reimagine how we sing and how we view ourselves.
That's true.
And that's a little bit about what we're talking about today. We're talking about reimagining and redesigning your ministry. I mean, this is going to be one of those episodes. Again, we say this almost every week, but we've got such great content. This is one of the ones where you're going to want to have a pen and a notebook handy, because we're going to be talking about what it means to transform your ministry, and you can do it as soon as today. I think after you listen to this, you'll have enough input to change your ministry. What do you think?
I think actually this interview and this clip are really like stretching in your brain.
Totally.
Like they've challenged me in every category.
Yeah. I completely agree. So to let you know who we've got coming up, we're going to be hearing from Reggie Joyner. Do you know anything about Reggie?
Of course.
Yes.
Reggie is the CEO and founder of Orange.
And he is your boss.
He is my boss.
And he is a great man. He's a great thinker. That's the thing. One of the things I love about Reggie is how creative, and not just creative. I mean, he is literally imaginative. He just imagine stuff. And that's what I love about him from a leadership point of view.
Yeah, it's part of the reason he went and saw Greatest Showman like 7 or 8 times in the theater.
Has he really?
Yeah, because
you know, I haven't even seen that song. I haven't even seen it.
You of all people need to see this
People
movie.
Keep telling me that. Why would I want to see that though?
It is so good. It's based on a true story.
But it's a musical.
I am not a musical kind of person.
Come on.
Come on. I love Disney, but I don't like theater or you know, that kind of stuff. But what I really loved about this was it was like believing in the people that nobody believed in kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it was basically everybody thought this guy was crazy, Barnum.
Yeah.
And he dreamt up this idea of a circus.
Yeah.
And people thought he was nuts. And then you look down the road and look how successful it was.
Mm.
And there's this whole song about how your dreams and how you see the world different keeps you awake at night. And I always think of Reggie because that is like the world he lives in for sure.
What are the lyrics to this song? How does it go?
You know what? They're offering at the theater. You can go to a sing-along version of it. If you and your wife want to go...
I'll go with you.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you have to come with us so that you can sing.
I will sing for you guys the whole movie.
Okay. Will you at least sing part of that song at the end of this podcast?
I'll think about it.
No, come on. You have to give people something that they want. You know,
Dave, I don't know. Now I have competition because you sang in the last episode.
It's true. But what if between now and the end of this episode, I can learn the song and we do a duet together?
A new era.
That is not going to happen, I don't think, but I'm trying to reimagine and redesign myself as I redesign our ministry. That's what really this is all about. After a clip from Reggie, we're going to be hearing from Jason and Hillary DeMeo. Now, they are the co-founders of a company called We Are Curio, which is a company that is dedicated to reimagining and redesigning things. And they've got a great concept called design thinking that they're going to unpack a little bit further.
I was just going to say, for those of you listening who are like, what is design thinking?
Yeah.
We've got a treat in store for you.
Yeah, you are going to get the inside track on what design thinking is. But before we throw to all of that, I just want to let you know that once again, today's episode is brought to you by The Orange Conference, which is a 3-day conference in Atlanta, Georgia, for your entire family ministry team.
Yes.
Hey, there's a whole big spiel here that I could read out, but Ash, I want to ask you, why should somebody come to the Orange Conference?
Well, I think there's something really powerful about attending a conference with your entire family ministry team, mm-hmm. because it gives you a common language.
Yep.
And when you go back to your church, mm-hmm. you actually have people to have a conversation with about what you were challenged with,
yeah.
and what does this look like across the board, not just in one ministry. And that's what this year's Orange Conference is all about.
Yeah.
It's called One Voice, and it's all about aligning your ministries and being intentional about that and how we can be we can gain more momentum by yeah. being aligned with each other.
Hey, you know the thing that I like most about the Orange Conference?
Oh.
You know what I... Yeah, I mean, yes. You are part of the reason I love the Orange Conference so much. But I love being in a room, in a large room, surrounded by... like student ministry, family ministry people, because there is an energy there.
There is.
I mean, it is like not like anything I've ever experienced before. Would you agree?
I love the Orange Conference. I was attending it long before I was on staff at Orange.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, when you get that many people in a room together who are all trying to move in the same direction yeah. or all...
And who are in family ministry and a little bit crazy.
It's so fun.
It is so fun.
And one of the things I love about the conference is it's not just all serious. We yeah. do make time to have fun together, yep. which is, I think, really important. And we have breakouts. So it's not just breakouts, a bunch of big yeah. ideas. It's big ideas followed by breakouts where you can process ideas in practical ways. And then there's time for you to, you know, eat meals with your team or complete strangers and figure out how that actually works in a context.
Yeah. And there's also, there's incredible speakers. It's held at a huge arena, but it also feels super intimate and small as well. I don't know.
Yeah.
I actually, every year I'm like, I don't know how they do that, but like it's, thousands and thousands of people, but it feels like it's happening in Reggie's living room or something. So I don't know how they do that, but it's worth coming to anyway. I know, I think I told you last time, there are people coming from Australia.
Listen.
That is incredible.
I know friends coming from Africa.
Well, which is further, Africa or Australia?
Australia. But I'm just saying, I also know people coming from far.
It's not a competition. It's not a competition. Just get to the Orange Conference however you can. To find out more information, go to theorangeconference.com, theorangeconference.com. You are absolutely going to love it. Okay, so we're going to hear it from Reggie. We're going to throw it straight over to him. And then we're going to go from that. We're going to go into an interview that Ash, you and I did with mm-hmm. Jason and Hillary DeMeo. Take it away, Reggie.
I think I've made a discovery about my own personal life in the last decade, and I'm going to try to share that with you for just a few minutes. I feel like a lot of the things that I have done in my life are more reactionary than they are creative. You know, some people say sometimes, you know, you're creative and innovative. And when I really start thinking about it and analyzing it, I think a lot of the things that I have done in my personal life as I've worked in ministry have really been a reaction. For example, when I was 8 years old, I hated Sunday school. As a matter of fact, for 6 months, I skipped Sunday school without my parents knowing it. You pull that off. I mean, I would watch them go down the hall and I would fake it like I'm going down this hall. And as soon as I could tell they were out of distance, I would leave, go back out the door, sit in our car, wait until I saw the adults coming out of Sunday school and everybody coming out of Sunday school. I would slip in with the crowd back into the worship service and I would take a seat by my mom and dad as if I had been in Sunday school. It worked great for 6 months. And by the way, there were two reasons I skipped Sunday school. One is because for me, it was boring. I just didn't connect. The second reason was I wanted the money. I had an envelope. Six months of dimes will not take you very far. But I was sitting in church with my mother one Sunday morning, and the Sunday school teacher came by and said, "We've been missing you in Sunday school." And for the next 3 years, I had perfect attendance in Sunday school. But when I became an adult, I just decided that Sunday never has to be boring. That somewhere along the way, we should just decide it doesn't have to be boring. And then when I became a student pastor, I was working in a church. I was young and naive. I really wasn't sure exactly how to navigate. I asked the teenagers one day, "Do you like the curriculum? Do you like what we do?" And none of them liked it. They all said, "We don't like it." So I took it upon myself as a 20-year-old to change the tradition of this church that had been in existence for a while. I got rid of the denominational curriculum, and we started doing our own thing. And I got a phone call from the chairman of the deacons in about 3 weeks. who asked me if the rumor was true. And I said, what rumor are you talking about? That we are no longer using the conventional denominational literature. And I said, well, you're talking about the Sunday school curriculum. We stopped using it because the teenagers don't like it. To which he responded, the chairman of the deacons, I'd only been working there for several months. He responded, what does that have to do with anything? They don't need to like it. They just need to learn it. To which in my mind, which I was smart enough not to say, I thought, what does it matter if they learn it if it doesn't mean anything? So I decided, you know what? Somewhere along the way, I want to make sure Sunday never has to be irrelevant. That we should make sure we're superficial. We're going to make sure that somewhere along the way, we're doing everything we need to do. I preached my first sermon when I was in my early 20s, and I remember this because it was an amazing message. I had pieces of three different communicators that I listened to all the time. I wove it together in this one message. You know, there was a guy, you know, named Adrian Rogers that I listened to all the time. There was another guy named Vance Havner, then a little bit of Billy Graham, and I mixed it all together. And it was amazing. I mean, there were people that laughed and smiled, and there was a deacon who came up and put his arm around me and said that was deep. And then, you know, I asked my dad, who my dad happens to be here tonight, and my dad, this is his first Orange Conference. So, you know, this is, so I asked my dad, I said, well, what did you think about my sermon? And he said, oh, it was pretty good for anybody who doesn't live in the real world. So I decided, you know what? Sunday never has to be irrelevant. And then I have this friend of mine who is a scientist, a physician, who dropped out of church after he became a Christian, and he just could not connect. He could not get involved in church. And so he just basically decided, I'm not going to do that anymore. He sent me this long letter to explain why, because he just didn't feel like he could connect. And so I decided, you know what, based on his story, I don't ever want the church to be exclusive. And then there was this moment in my life as a young child when I was at this farmhouse where, you know, my aunt lived, and I was walking, you know, from the front of the house into the back bedroom where I stayed in the summer. And I remember, you know, when you're an 8-year, 9-year-old boy and you're walking through, you know, an older lady's bedroom, you have to be careful late at night. And I remember I was tiptoeing through her room and I heard her call my name, and I froze because I thought I'd been caught because I'd been sneaking out. And I looked around and she wasn't calling my name. She was actually kneeling beside her bed and she was praying, and she was praying for me. And I remember thinking in my mind, for the first time in my life, I didn't realize you could talk to God on a day other than Sunday. I didn't realize you could have a conversation, and that this faith that we talk about could be something that was every day. So I decided, you know what? Sunday never, ever has to be disconnected. That if we do our job, we will make sure that what we create and what we do when we reimagine Sunday is we create it in a new way, so it never has to be boring, it never has to be superficial, it never has to be irrelevant, it never has to be exclusive, and it never has to be disconnected. But there's a secret to reimagining Sunday that I want us to talk about today. And the secret is simply this. You have to imagine someone's Monday before you can reimagine what happens on Sunday. Here's the point. Monday's coming. It's coming with a vengeance every week. There's nothing you can do about it. And the kids who leave your church are going to walk through your door, and they're going to walk through another door. And the better you understand the other door they're going to walk through, the more effective you'll be as a church, the more effective you'll be as a communicator. Because if you think about it, you know, there is a 9-year-old, right, who's going to walk through your door into a house they used to live in. But now they're just visiting that house because their mom and their dad are separated. And you've got to understand their Monday if you're going to make Sunday what it should be. And you know what else? There is a 10th grader who will be leaving your church, walking through the doors of your church, walking out of your church, and walking into the doors of a prom where the music is romantic, the crowd is energized, and the evening feels a little too magical. And you have an opportunity on Sunday to say what needs to be said, to give the messages that need to be given so she understands how what you say translates into her Monday. There's a 3-year-old, right? Imagine the 3-year-old who leaves your preschool on Sunday morning, crawling into the car of his or her mother, into the car seat, to go to her grandmother's house without any idea that she'll be living there now indefinitely. You've got to understand a little bit of the story and a little bit of what's going on in the background. Or we could talk about, you know, a sixth grader. A sixth grader who'll be walking through the door of your church, into the door of his school, into a math class. A math class where he's failing. A math class where he never feels like he's good enough or smart enough. A math class where he feels like he's so far behind, he will never, ever catch up. And we could talk about a 12th grader who is going to ultimately one day walk into a college through the door of an institution, and there in that college, he's going to be introduced to people that are wise and smart and exciting and intelligent. And somewhere in the context of that, these people that are winsome are going to talk to him about things that challenge everything he's ever believed. And you have an opportunity in his world and in his life to set him up to win on that Monday. And we could talk about the eighth grader, right? Who's walking through your door into his locker room because he barely made the B team. And somehow he just never feels like he can quite live up to the potential. And all of these people are just symbols of what happens on Monday, that somehow in the world that you live in the world that you have to lead, you have to somehow lean into them, because it's easy for us to drift into becoming the kind of church, if we're not careful, that answers questions that nobody is really asking, that argues about things that really don't matter, that treats people like they're outsiders and they don't belong. It's not that we do that intentionally. It's just that we've done what we've done for so long, we don't know how to connect and create a different kind of mindset. And somewhere, I believe, when we gather like this, we have to have an opportunity to sit down and talk about what is it we need to change and what is it we need to innovate. Because here's what I'm going to assume before we kick off this conference and kind of get into the details of what you're going to talk about this week. I'm going to assume that most of us in this room are here because we want to do something about making Sunday better. And we want to do something about making our church connect to a generation in a way that makes a difference in their life and it has the kind of influence that we feel like. And here's the problem that somehow I think you face and I face when it comes to the real world of Sundays and Mondays. You don't have to work at feeling the pressure that Sunday's coming. It just naturally is going to happen. I mean, every week it's coming and you feel that pressure. Every week you're wrestling with that. Every week you're trying to figure out, okay, how am I going to make Sunday work and make Sunday happen? Because somewhere along the way, you got to figure out if you have the right number of volunteers. You got to figure out if the technical parts are taking place and happening. If the people are showing up the way they're supposed to be showing up, because you feel the pressure that Sunday's coming. But what if we started thinking for just a few minutes about Monday's coming in the light of Sunday? Would that make a difference? And here's what I think. If you start for just a few days focusing on Monday and what Monday means, it could shift the way you think and the way you see what you do every week. For example, when you only have a Sunday's mindset, you think about what happens during 1 hour. But when you have a Monday's coming mindset, you think about what happens during the rest of the week. Somewhere along the way, you've got to decide, how am I going to take what I'm doing and stretch it into the rest of the week so I can make a different kind of difference in the life of a kid or teenager? And it's a matter of influence. When you only have a Sunday mindset, you measure success by how many you're going to show up. But if you have a Monday mindset, you measure success by how many come back, because you know that what you say has to be said in a way where it matters and it's helpful, so they will show back up. When you have an only Sunday mindset, you recruit enough volunteers for every room. And that's kind of the old standard. We got to have enough bodies in a room to make sure it works. But when you have a Monday mindset, you make sure that you recruit a consistent leader for every kid or teenager, because the goal changes. It shifts. And one of the things we love to talk about is what that looks like and what that means in the light of putting a consistent leader in the life of every kid. When you have a Sunday mindset, you tend to say what matters to you. Excuse me. You make decisions based on who is coming, because you're thinking in terms of who is showing up. But when you have a Monday mindset, you tend to make changes to reach who isn't coming. In other words, you're thinking about the people who don't show up every week. When you have a Sunday mindset, you say what matters for you, because you're moved by what matters to you, right? There's a tendency for us as leaders to craft our messages, to craft what we're saying around what we want to hear, what we think, what we like. But if you have a Monday's coming mindset, you decide that you're going to say what matters, so it matters to kids and teenagers. You're thinking in terms of what you can do to connect to them. If you have a Sunday mindset, you challenge leaders to promote weekend programs. But if you have a Monday mindset, You challenge leaders to champion weekly values. Someone said it here just a while ago before we ever started. She said, the thing I love about coming and hanging out with people in Atlanta at Orange Conference is so many of the people in the room think like I think. So many people in the room have some of the common values and the language we share, and we can get on the same page fast. What we want to happen in the course of the next few days is for you to get on the same page really fast with people who think about Monday and people who think in terms of what are we going to do to influence a generation around us, not just those who come, those in our communities around the church, and what does it take for us to be a different kind of leader and to think in terms of what we do.
All right, well, Ashley and I are now joined in the bunker via the Skype technology with the one and only Jason and Hillary DeMayo. And you guys, I gotta start by saying, you guys look like you are literally in a bunker.
We are. We're in a closet actually right now. We're at a hotel and we've got pillows around us. We did whatever we could to make this not echoey in here. So we're doing our best.
It looks fantastic. Hey, for all of our listeners who maybe don't know who you are, could you give us a thumbnail each of who you are, what and what you guys do?
Yeah, totally. So I'm Jason, my wife, Hillary.
Hello, here. Hello.
We run a company together. We're the co-founders of an innovation agency called We Are Curio.
Yep.
So you might be saying, what is that? Hopefully we can unpack that for you all. But three things that we focus on identity. So we come alongside individuals and organizations, really help them figure out their identity, whether that's their culture, their brand, kind of their story, all of that. Ideation, which ideation is just another word for coming up with a lot of ideas. So we come alongside them, come up with a lot of ideas with them. And then really that we move into strategy is our third piece. So identity, ideation, and strategy. And so how do we build an innovation strategy for your organization and help you bring some of these exciting things that you want to see happen into the world? So we live in those three buckets and do a lot of different projects with us.
And you're married and you have a three-year-old, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, we are. We've been married for 11 years. And so we really do this journey together. Jason's really the big dreamer and I'm really the strategist behind it. And so together we have a ton of fun and we're just a few years in and we are just really figuring it out as we go along, but we're having a ton of fun and just honestly can't even believe what we're doing here. It's a blast.
Well, before Ashley gets down into the hardcore tough questions about everything that you guys do, we've delved a little bit into your background. We understand that Jason, you're a bit of a amateur rap artist.
Yes.
Just wondering, you know, we like to get some talent out on the podcast. So I'm wondering is there any way you could like freestyle for us or just, you know, spit out some rhymes? That would be amazing.
Spit out some rhymes.
This is my big moment here.
Come on, franchise.
How did you find that?
Well, you know, we dive deep here in the Orange Bunker.
I'm not a great freestyler, but let me try to think here for a second. I'm kind of into the whole Atlanta scene, you know, got the mumble rappers there. You've got Migos, that whole crew. So we're trying to triplet flow going. Here we go. Coming on the podcast. We be hanging with Ashley and Dave. This is gonna be the number one. Gonna be your fave. We love Orange. Yes, we do. This the podcast. They gonna come and put Curio on blast. Here we go. All right, I got it.
Yes. All right.
That was so fun.
Yeah. Ash, was that?
Someone talk to Sojourner, Lecrae, or something. Yeah. Get him on the horn.
Listen, we've got that recorded. We'll send it around. Yes.
This is my moment.
We want to, and we just want to let it be known that you broke on the Orange Podcast.
It's been since high school since I've dusted off my skills. So
well, you should explore that. That was wonderful.
That was so good.
Got a little excited.
Hey, so first off, can you tell us a little bit about what We Are Curio? What does it do? How did it start? And you know, unpack some of those buckets a little bit more.
Well, I was pastoring. I pastored for 5 years. I was in corporate America for 5 years at Geico. You know, 15% can save you 15 or whatever.
It's ingrained deeply.
Yeah. Hi, this is Jason. Welcome to Geico. And then I pastored for 5 years and loved it. Loved getting to pastor and be around people, build just into people, empathy, all of that kind of stuff. And then probably about two, 3 years in, I fell in love with just design, art, architecture, all of those types of things. And for me, whatever I start reading is pretty much where I'm going next. So look at what I'm reading and you'll know where our company and where I'm kind of going. So I started reading about design and architecture and all that. And then I stumbled on this thing called design thinking. And so I've never been like a big, like I'm a leadership guy or things like that. I'm like more of an artist than a leader. But for me, design thinking was a lens that allowed me to lead in a way that fit me. I was it had art at the center of it. It had empathy. And I'm like, this makes sense. I can be a leader with this. So that's kind of how it started. I've always wanted to be a consultant. I don't know why. I like kind of just helping people see their dreams come true. And so I thought this was a great place. I found that design thinking was like my thing. And I was like, you know, I read everything I could on it. And I got to go up to Harvard and I got to study there in design thinking. So it was just like, it just really fit me. And I said, this is it. And I went all in, transitioned out of my position at the church. And now I'm obviously full-time and Hill's doing it full-time too. So,
yeah.
Jason, you mentioned design thinking several times. Can you explain to our listeners, what exactly do you mean by that?
Yeah, this is it's an interesting question, because I do think that anyone you ask this to that's in design thinking world is going to have a different answer with this. Design thinking really is kind of a framework that pulls together from the designer's toolkit to solve problems. So it's really, more than anything, it's a problem-solving framework. Mm-hmm. It brings the left brain and the right brain together, meshes those together, and we really think that's where you kind of solve problems. So some big words that are in design thinking are, one, empathy. You start with your stakeholder in mind. How do you deeply empathize with them? And I think the other big thing is prototyping. And so a lot of people want to, you know, launch something big or come up with an idea and then launch it. We say kind of start small, prototype, iterate that prototype, get feedback from your stakeholders. And so there's a bigger thing I can kind of go into about design thinking, but I would say it's about empathy and it's about using the designer's toolkit to solve problems. Mm.
Okay, so I work with middle school students, so I'm going to try to bring this down to the middle school level, because you're still using words and phrases that I'm not sure that I fully understand, and I'm guessing I'm not the only one listening that feels that way.
Yes.
But when you say you start with empathy, you're talking about design thinking, getting to know the person you're working with and feeling their tensions, or what do you mean by that?
That's good.
Well, I was even going to say, so I can completely like relate to you, Ashley. So Jason was in this world of design thinking and reading all these books, and I'm sitting over here, and I worked at a university for 10 years at Southeastern, and I'm going, that's really neat. Okay, that's fascinating. I was, you know, great wife, listening, supporting, cheering him on, but it didn't really make a whole lot of sense to me as a person. So the thing that connected me to design thinking is this, and I love to say it's so simple in the sense that a right brain thinker is a lot of times you would think maybe of your creative student in your middle school, and your left brain thinker is maybe more your analytical, the one who wants answers, they want to ask questions, or they like need concrete things. Well, that's me, and Jason is really the right brain. So really, I think the simplest form is design thinking is when right brain and left brain thinking comes together to solve a problem, bringing those two really viewpoints, and then they say, you don't forsake one without the other. You need them both. And with that, then you come up a new solution to that. So absolutely, empathy is really, you know, what does a middle schooler need? What do they want? What do they feel? What do they think? And really getting into their shoes without just, you know, making up a solution or programming an experience for them. You're really understanding and sitting with them and then designing something for your middle schooler.
That's so good. Can I tag on that real quick too? I think that a lot of times, I've done this many times in my leadership, but you design something for people that you think they want.
Yes.
Without talking to them about what they want. So it's like, whatever you're the pastor of or you're the leader of, you're like, they want these small groups and they want this, and this is just what's happening. But you didn't take the time to deeply listen, to deeply talk to them, and just figure out, have empathy for the end user, the people that you're creating for. And then not only just listening to them, inviting them into the process to co-create whatever you're building. So I think those are a couple big pieces, the empathy, the co-creation, and then the prototyping is really the building something and then always living in beta. And now I'm using design thinking speak again. But you are continually adjusting your product, your service, and adjusting for the feedback that you're getting from the people that you're designing for.
Right. How is this design thinking, how is it different from brainstorming?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question. People are always like, yeah, is this brainstorming? Is this sticky notes? Is this like, what is
it? It's an ideas shower.
Right. So for us, I mean, brainstorming, I don't want to down brainstorming. There's all kinds of different ways that people are brainstorming now. You've got mind mapping and framestorming and all these different names. But really all it is idea generation. And you want to generate a lot of ideas. But it's really, for me, the difference between design thinking and brainstorming is that brainstorming is like one of like 100 tools that we use.
Yeah.
And design thinking is an entire framework for moving an idea to action. So we do brainstorming. We get with people and we say, hey, throw some ideas out. How might we create this? How might we create that? And we kind of go wide. And then we kind of get pointed to, once we brainstorm, curate the best ideas, and then move those things forward. So brainstorming to me opens up the ideas. Design thinking takes the idea from the beginning to the end to get something to market.
Okay. See, I would say that brainstorming is like the wow, but what you're adding to the wow is the how, right?
Right. So,
and I would even say too, in addition to brainstorming, I think a lot of times brainstorming starts with what you as the creative, the people in the room think on your own you should do. But what I think design thinking, it actually starts maybe, let's say, at zero, and you actually go and you ask users and you ask your people before. So say you're your church leaders, you're in a room and you're like, okay, we're going to have this new program and we're all going to brainstorm. Well, it's our ideas that we're going to brainstorm. But design thinking, you would have gone and either surveyed or asked some people or even invited your middle school students or your parents or to sit in the room and brainstorm with you. So brainstorming, I think, sometimes already starts. It's all of our ideas, maybe as the leaders coming up with ideas. But design thinking saying, no, we want to empathize. We want to go to the people we're going to design the solution, either invite them in through either survey, physically asking them to be in the room, bring them into the brainstorming. Don't just start. So it's a step before and it's a step after.
So would you say surveying is a form of design thinking?
It's a tool that would be used in design thinking. So surveying, like, we use this thing called like empathy maps. You would actually really try to understand people deeply. So it's a tool that is used in design thinking.
I was going to say, to give you kind of an understanding of how we approach design thinking. So we have a 4-stage process. And so when you talk about brainstorming, that happens in the second stage of the process a lot, but I'll just kind of give you a framework for what it looks like. And then maybe we can talk a little more about it. But so our 4 stages of design thinking are immerse, expand, design, and act. So to us, immerse is where you're deeply listening, where you're doing research and development. You're finding analogous companies and analogous people saying, how are they doing it? How could we do it? You're trying to get to kind of the core issue, the right question, the why, I guess you could say, is really trying to figure things out, get things aligned before you even start brainstorming. So that could be surveying, that could be focus groups, that could be just literally doing research and just like listening and working your way through that. Once you've done that, it's important. Your brainstorm won't work if you haven't framed the problem correctly. So once you have kind of done the research, you need to come up with a problem statement. So you move from immerse, the bridge from immerse to expand is a problem statement. What are we trying to solve? So you kind of write that problem statement out. And then the expand phase is where you would see a lot of brainstorming type stuff going on. We're trying to pull ideas out of people and we go wide again. So it's like, come up with any idea that you've ever thought of. And so we go into the expand mode. Once you've done that, you kind of curate your best ideas, take 2 or 3 of kind of the themes. Sometimes we do voting inside of brainstorming. Sometimes we just look for themes and things like that. And now you say, okay, this idea is awesome. We're going to prototype this idea. So now you're in the 3rd stage of the process, design. So design to us is prototyping. It's testing. You prototype, test. It's what iteration is. Once you finally feel like you have something that's valuable, now you figure out how are we going to scale this? How are we going to roll this out? And that would be kind of your action step. So to me, if you're asking about brainstorming, it's one little piece of the slice. It's an important piece. But if you just have brainstorming without the follow-up, it's just a lot of cool sticky notes and a lot of ideas.
Well, and we are in the bunker surrounded by sticky notes, I can tell you that.
We love them. No one's knocking.
How do you think a church staff or a student ministry, how can they use design thinking to maximize the results for their ministry?
Well, I think that it all starts, we've said this already, but it starts with empathy. Like, I remember being a pastor and just designing experiences for people, but I didn't talk to them. So this is the first thing that I ask people to do is like, how many people have you sat down with before you started the thing that you want to start? Mm-hmm. So I think the first thing would be is to bring a group of people together, key stakeholders in your group, and listen to them. Just give them the opportunity to talk, give them the opportunity to give ideas, give them the investment into what you're making. Because even if you make something that's beautiful and designed well and awesome, if you haven't brought your students or whoever it is into the process with you, they're not going to have the buy-in that you want them to have. So I think that that would be the first way I would say to bring design thinking to student ministry is to listen to the people that you're designing for, invite them into a space where they can give their opinion freely. And I think you'll start designing better solutions that way.
And I think even just to add to that is then also let them be the designers with you. I think that the student ministries that have maybe impacted my own life where I've seen really work is that it's not just a group of people designing for the students, but it's really the students get to design something that they want to be a part of. And so when they get to be the co-creators with you, they really buy in. They're going to invite their friends. They're going to want to volunteer. They're going to be excited. They're going to be telling their parents, you know, it's not just a matter of this is something that somebody else came up with, but we really created this with the leaders. And so it's a co-creation together with the leaders, the students, the volunteers, and really everyone's owning these ideas.
And I think you don't have to bring them because sometimes that might seem a little daunting to just bring a bunch of people into the process and, hey, youth kids, make your youth group. You know, like you were hired for a reason to bring some leadership and some vision, which is why I think prototyping is so important because you can come up with an idea, you bring the prototype to the people that you're serving, and then you allow them to play with that, to break it, to say, this doesn't work and I don't like this about it. But if you only just bring them either a finished product or nothing, like tabula rasa, like zero, like tell us what you think. Bring them something and allow them to play with it, allow them to break it. We always say that people are sacred, but ideas aren't. So you bring these ideas to people, and people, they get so wrapped up in their ideas that their idea is sacred, but really the people with you are sacred. Mm-hmm. The idea is just the idea, and so we all get to kind of play with the idea together, and I think that's what makes it fun, and I think it makes it where people want to be a part of what you're building.
Yeah, that seems so different to what a lot of churches are doing, right? They set up a situation where it's the staff members who are brainstorming and getting these ideas, but they don't bring the kids in.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
Have you seen, are there any churches or any even just organizations who you know of that are using this idea of design thinking?
Yeah, absolutely. There's tons of every organization that we work with does this. So we kind of like obviously make it happen. One is Southeastern University, and so is one of our clients. And so they're building a whole new program that they want to make this amazing ministry school for students. And so two things that they've done is they bring together students to give input to this. So we kind of lead sessions with the students. What would you want out of a master's degree or an undergraduate degree? What tools and what skills do you think you need? But what also is cool is they're bringing together not just professors, but people all over the U.S., practitioners. They're bringing them together and saying, what do you want out of a student in your church? So instead of the university just, okay, we're just going to make up what we think that people and pastors want from the people who are leaving here. They're bringing the students, and then they're bringing kind of the stakeholder as the student, but also the stakeholder as the employer someday, inviting both of them into the process. Mm-hmm. And I think that they're really crafting something that's going to be innovative and it's going to suit both of their stakeholders really well. So that's an example. I mean, we were at a restaurant the other day that's now bringing in its customers and talking to them about their brunch menu and they're tasting stuff and they're giving feedback on it. And you just don't get to see that very much. People just typically deliver their art to you and say, take it or leave it. what we try to get people to do is back up and say, no, 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 let's create this art piece together. And I think that that's powerful. So I don't know if you have any examples, Hilton, you want to add to that?
I think those are both great.
Hey, so that's really interesting. What I'm hearing you say is that a place like Southeastern is changing the input that's coming in order to create something new, right?
Yes, totally. So you've heard the phrase garbage in, garbage out. That's like a thing that people say all the time. I don't know if I changed it. Maybe I heard it somewhere, but I always say good inputs, good outputs. So you still have GIGO, but if you change it to from garbage in, garbage out, you put new good inputs in, you're going to get good inputs out. So things that we would say are good inputs, a process. You need to have, things that we would say are good inputs, start with your mindsets. What are the mindsets of the team? When we go into organization or even our own organization, we come up with the mindsets. What are the mindsets, the way that you're going to work with one another? And really, if you shape that really, really well and you build those into your team, they produce such dividends on the results side. So I would say mindsets first. If you grow your mindsets, you're going to change your outputs there. Processes, what are the processes that you put in place? Like we just talked about our process, Immerse, Expand, Design, Act. How do you approach the process that you guys do? I would say the tools that you use, we've talked about tools a lot. What tools are you going to use to make this thing move forward? Mm-hmm. And then the last thing I would say that's a huge input is the voices. So mm-hmm. Who are you allowing in your head, in the process? Who's the team that you have? Who are the inside voices in the organization? And then who are the outside voices in the organization? And are they really shaping you into who you need to become? We talk a lot about idea mentors. And so if someone says, hey, Jason, I've got this idea. Do you think it's a good idea? Well, half the time I don't totally understand what the idea is. Excuse me. And so I say, well, give me some examples of people who are doing something like that already. Like, mm-hmm. Who would you say, like, if you're a musician, you're not going to say, well, we're like nobody. We're we're the first music person who ever sounded like this. You're like, no, we're like a mix of, you know, Coldplay and Bruce Springsteen and whatever, and Migos. And you're like, wow, that's something unique.
Wow. That's unique.
That sounds like my band.
No one's ever done that. So,
do you want to sing us one of your songs, Dave?
A bit later on.
So who is mentoring you? Who is mentoring the idea that you're mm-hmm. having? So I think that's a good question to ask. But then a question also we ask people is, who's your anti-mentor? So if you're like, okay, I do not want to be like this person, or mm-hmm. I do not want to be like this organization. That's the opposite of what we want to become like. Mm-hmm. And so who are the voices that you're allowing to shape you? I think are the inputs. They're going to shape the outputs that you have.
Mm-hmm. That's good. One of Curio's mindsets is we hack the system. So what does it look like to have a make it happen kind of attitude?
I think that as design thinkers and as creatives and people who are kind of forging a new path, you really have to figure out that you're going to get a lot of no's and a lot of resistance. And a lot of times in ministry or launching a business, being an entrepreneur, we really believe in this idea that you can find a new path to get there. And so a lot of times when we're talking about design thinking and we're trying to explain it, a lot of times you just have to show people what you're talking about. And so we believe in this idea of show, don't tell. So if you're wanting to kind of hack it together and make it happen, it's like, don't just take that first no, like be a problem solver and find out a new way, access those, you know, networks and resources, and really finding how you can maybe get to a yes and maybe a different way than everybody else would have. And I think that's what really opens doors, that people get shut down so quickly. And it's like, no, just keep pushing, keep looking for new answers. And really, the more people you bring into these processes, the new ways that you look at them, you'll find ways that you could have never imagined. And it's just like, keep hacking, keep going, keep pushing on, and you'll eventually find that yes.
I was going to add just that I think that we try to approach things as experiments and almost as like a lab mentality. So when I say like make it happen or hack the system, I go back to being in church world. And I read all the books and I wanted to be innovative and show the church could be differently. And so I was probably annoying to my lead pastor sometimes, but I always wanted to do things differently. And he challenged me one time. He said, well, let's just, what is your idea? Let's label it an experiment. And let's just try it. And so for me, it was like, instead of trying to change the whole system, try to hack it. Like, I took a Wednesday night and I made it the exact thing that I wanted it to be and showed, hey, we can bring some people together, do it a little bit differently. And just showing people rather than telling them your ideas will change the whole game, mm-hmm. I think. It's like if you don't have enough budget, you don't have enough money to get your thing done, a lot of times money follows vision, but also money follows like your work. So if you show somebody your work, they'll say, oh, that works. Sometimes they just can't see it. So hacking the system sometimes to me is just doing something small, the most minimum viable product that you could put out. Show them that you can do that, prove that. And then I think a lot of times the resources come after you've shown that you can handle something small, then people will give you a little bit more leeway.
I like the whole show, don't tell mindset. That's really cool.
It's good.
From your work in church world, if you go back those years to when you were doing that, how would you advise somebody who's in student ministry world to experiment? Maybe they don't have a Wednesday night that they can experiment like with like you did, but is there something smaller, maybe more practical you could give them right now?
I think that really every opportunity, let's say it's a small group. And so maybe you just take one small group of middle school or high school kids and you want to prototype a program or an idea that you have for all, you know, 50 or 100 kids in your entire youth group. But instead of having and adopt a whole new, you know, strategy for everybody in the youth group, just start small. Like, and a lot of times that's the best because a small group, you can see how it affects people. You can get feedback. You can actually, as the pastor, sit down with 10 students and say, how did you feel? How did you enjoy this? Would you then go lead a group with your friends? Would you invite them to be a part? And so absolutely, I think oftentimes we think that just the biggest programs are going to be the best programs. But I think oftentimes our best work comes from these small settings where we just start with a few people and we get really raving fans of what we're doing. And then they're willing to invite other people to be a part of it. So I never would stray away from the idea that if we can't change the whole ministry or the whole organization, then don't do it. Actually, I think starting small is where the greatest impact happens. And then more people will get excited and get on board really with these ideas. And then you can do incredible things and build on them. But it's like a really strong foundation is really, I think, what sets it is going to create a great future.
Yeah, I'm with her. I think so often what we do is we focus on the big things rather than focusing on these little small experiments that we all have opportunity to have, right? We all want to change Sunday, but maybe we can't change Sunday overnight. We need to focus somewhere smaller before we do that. That's really good advice.
You have the whole week to experiment. Like, you've got Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. My thought is really to go back to that empathy piece and listen to the people you're serving and every output that you have is going to be different because every person that you serve is different. So listen to them deeply and say, hey, if you could do ministry in a different way, what would you want to do? How would you like to do that? And then, like you said, do experiments, do prototypes, and allow them to be a part of the process.
Going back to what Reggie said in that clip before, if we're going to shift our focus from Sunday to Monday, you're saying using design thinking, our focus would be on maybe the input that we would have is what do we want them to do on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or what is their life on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and plan the Sunday event around that information rather than how do we want them to act on Sunday or what do we want them to do on Sunday. That's what you're saying?
Yeah, I think that's awesome. Well, one way I think that you can take it to Monday is that it's not all about what is obviously happening on Sunday. It's how can you get your parents too to translate this into their life? Like, so mm-hmm. I would say the one challenge I would make first thing to parents is what are your family's mindsets? What makes your family different and special and makes you do things the way that you do them? So the word curio literally means a rare or unique thing. And every family has its own unique way of doing things. And so I would say make your mindset. So the DeMeos have mindsets. They are stewardship, fun, creativity. We're faith-filled. We're healthy. These are things that we build our lives and our weeks around. And so then I would say, okay, what's your process? If you're saying processes, well, those are typically sounds a little bit more organizational or things like that. To me, what are your family rituals? Like, not just your processes, but what are the rituals? What's a Monday like for your family? What's a Wednesday? You know, like, what are the ways that you learn to be healthy as a family? So, and like building those rituals while you do that. So, and then I think you go back to Monday morning. How do you run a bunch of prototypes, run a bunch of experiments? If you want to invite people to church or get someone that to follow Jesus. Well, I've always been one just like, take more experiments. Don't just put all your eggs in one basket. Just like, have a cool conversation here, have a great conversation there. And it, for me, empathy is about listening and it's about questions. And anybody can ask their friends questions. Anybody can deeply empathize with their friends and not have all the answers about Jesus. People just want to be heard and understood and listened to. And if you do that, if you get the empathy piece right, I think Jesus can move mountains through that. So just a couple, I guess, ideas of how you could integrate kind of the empathy, the mindsets, the prototyping into your week.
Hey, Jason, how would design thinking have changed your ministry years? If you knew all of this before you went into ministry, what would you have done differently?
That's a great question. I mentioned it earlier, but I would have listened way more deeply to my stakeholders and the stakeholders of the people that are in your church. I would have had probably a guiding team instead of just having a leader or someone who's over the small groups or over the engage experience we used to have. I would put together a guiding team that would be my sounding board. And so I think that you have to have healthy dissent. And when you're a leader, you just want to like, you don't want to have dissent a lot of times because you want to move your ideas forward. And I'm reading, was reading a book called Originals, which is really, really good by Adam Grant. And he talks about how we have to have dissent in our organizations, healthy dissent, not just people who are just trying to make you feel bad, but who literally think differently than you and give you different perspectives. So I think I would have crafted a better guiding team around everything that I did. I would have made it really diverse, not only in background, but also in kind of levels of experience, higher level leaders, people who are just going to be in it. I would have crafted these guiding teams. I would have listened more. And then I would have taken the pressure off of myself to create big successes and would have just been happy building small wins and watching those change and grow and inviting people into the process.
What you just said is everything that you'd been saying. You would have changed all the inputs. You would have changed all the information you had and the outcome would have been completely different, I would have imagined.
You nailed it. Mm-hmm. That's it.
I will say at the end of his pastoring, because probably the last year to 2 years, he really started experimenting and understanding design thinking. And we did start changing the way that we like worked with the small group leaders. That was one of the things that Jason was over. And so we started making this like once a month breakfast. It was an hour. I picked up like donuts. It was like so low key, but we actually brought our small group leaders together and we said, okay, share with us, what are you doing? What's working in your small groups? And actually started listening. So it is kind of neat in his like 5 years, I would say probably 4 years was non-design thinking. And the last year was design thinking. And it started really becoming the essence and the core of us as a family of really realizing, wow, like that there is something to this idea. And that is really where like Curio was birthed, because it started working and it actually started changing the way that we were creating events or the creating experiences or running small groups or putting on different services. And so we actually said, wow, we think we could help other churches or other organizations, like let's just not keep this here. Mm-hmm. And I was working at Southeastern University. And so then I started implementing it. So it was out of trying it and seeing it work, we realized, wow, we really think there's something to this, rather than just keeping it here at this one church.
I'll add just one more thing on that too. It's always frustrated me how one-sided the church experience is. So you come, you sit, you listen, you watch a video, you watch a performance, anything like that. And so I really feel like not only co-creating the experience for people beforehand, but inviting them into the experience right there. And so all of my speaking and all of my kind of presentation stuff that I did maybe at the beginning of my ministry moved towards experiential work towards the end. And I feel like it had such a bigger impact on people than me just like lecturing or giving a sermon or whatever, but inviting them in to have conversations at your table, doing a Q&R in the moment. Like, I'm really excited about people who are like messing with like what actually Sunday or these experiences could actually be instead of just a one-sided presentation. We've got so much wisdom, knowledge, like gifts inside embedded in our church, whether it's your youth group or your church. And it's like, how do you get that collective wisdom out of the group while you're there together? How do you connect them better? I'm really interested in that. And so I think that making things more participatory would be another big thing that I would just keep building on, I guess.
But that sounds really dangerous for churches. You know, it's easy to control the person who's, you know, up the front. It's a one-way communication. But what you're saying is super dangerous, right?
I think anything you do is dangerous. So there's a huge danger inherent to putting all this pressure on one person and one team to put together the gospel message in a perfect package. And you can't do this in every environment. But every time that I have allowed more participation from the group, where I've relinquished more control, I've got more dynamic results from it. So it's a little bit more dangerous. And I think you would ease yourself into it, because now I'm like, hooked on it. We're doing all kinds of stuff with people. But if you could just find one way to change that, one thing that I think would be so powerful is if a third of the way or halfway through your sermon, you said, instead of waiting 30 minutes, hey, I just talked about XYZ idea. Talk to your friend about that. Let's take a 5-minute conversation right in the middle of the sermon, meet 5 people around you, and let's talk about that. So I think it's a little bit dangerous to relinquish that control, but what you get back with it of the investment and the excitement, I think that it's worth experimenting with, because I think the future is going to be there where people are participating rather than just spectating.
Now, Hillary, you just a minute ago you implied that you're using design thinking in your family as well. For all the parents who are listening and you know they're thinking this is a great idea of changing inputs, how does it work with your family? How does it work in your house?
Yeah, so really, I think even just naturally, because Jason is probably this right brain thinker and I'm really this left brain thinker, we come to solutions and solve really challenges together when we're addressing our 3-year-old. But it's really this idea that things in our family is ever growing, in the sense of the way that we might parent Eliana, you know, last week or month is not going to be the same thing that might work next week, especially as a 3-year-old who's like growing so fast and changing. And so it's really this idea that our family is an experiment, and like, we definitely don't have this thing right. We're like doing our best. So we're trying, but we're really always trying to figure out, and even this idea of inputs. So who are the voices that are shaping Eliana? I want her to be around just incredibly strong, like just an awesome women and men too. But like, she has some, my friends and some different people that are just incredible voices that she's with and that are influencing her. So it's, what does it look like to shape and to intentionally create this life for Eliana, for Jason and I? What does it look like to, just because maybe, you know, 6 months ago, the way that we connected as a married couple is working, that might not work in this new season. We're entrepreneurs, we're, you know, launching things. We have to keep like figuring out new ways and trying new things. It'd be like, wow, that didn't work. Or in this season, maybe, you know, a date night is what's working this season, but maybe we need to change a little bit. Maybe we need more connection because we're in a really busy season, or we're, you know, we're walking with a lot of faith in this season and we really need to change, you know, prayer or meeting with our mentors more, what it looks like. So we see our marriage, our life, our co-parenting, this thing that we're trying to push together, we're really seeing it. It's always evolving. It's always prototyping. We're always getting new inputs and keeping inputs and just saying like, what we did last year is not going to work this year. It's a new season. And so we get new ideas and just keep trying to create a life of flourishing and in an environment where each one of us flourishes. And we're always evaluating too. It's one season, Eliana might need a little bit more than Jason and I. And then maybe one season it's about me a little bit more. And maybe one season it's a little bit more about Jason. And so, but really it's the team DeMeo. Is it flourishing? And let's keep, you know, iterating until we get something that's working right for the three of us.
So what does the word curio actually mean?
Yeah. So crazy enough, probably, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, I was selling random things on Etsy. Like, I just loved going to yard sales. Like, it's just a passion of mine. I like going to yard sales and I like finding interesting items. And I've always just had an eye for design. And so it was my Saturdays. I just liked to go out and just enjoy picking up interesting things. So we started this little side business and I was doing a thing called Etsy, and we called it Curio because literally we were picking curio. So like, a curio is a rare or a unique item. So, or an idea. Curio literally just means like pretty much unique, something that's unique. And so we try to ask that question of people that we work with, and also organizations and individuals. You know, what makes you unique? What is your curio? Like, there's something embedded in you. Mm-hmm. We always say, nobody's special because God loves us all the same, but everybody's unique. So you're not special, but you're unique. Like, and let's like drill down into mm-hmm. what makes you you, like, and then capitalize on that. And that, when we talk about identity, ideation, and strategy, if we can get to that curio, if we can get to that identity piece with someone, like, they are going to naturally build an awesome thing from what they're doing. So we're really always just looking and making sure, is this idea that you're having, how does it align with your identity, your curio? Mm-hmm. And if that's lined up, the rest of the processes and the strategy become so much easier mm-hmm. than if you're misaligned and then you build your life off of a misaligned life. Mm-hmm. So curio means something unique, and it really points to what makes people unique too.
And I was gonna say with that, I think that's what's so important for in the ministry. It's nowadays with social media and this comparison game, we can look and see what everybody else mm-hmm. is doing in ministry or in their businesses. And it starts to get, that's great for inspiration. But when it comes to finding your unique curio and your unique thing that you bring to the world and your expression, it's so critical that you do the dig deep of finding out your mm-hmm. unique curio as a ministry, because, you know, you only have your group of students or your families in your church, and your church is a unique group of people. And so mm-hmm. if all of our ministries and all of our churches are looking the same, well, we're probably missing something because we're not expressing the unique people that make up our pews. Mm-hmm. And so I just challenge those who are listening to this is, yes, get inspiration from other people, but then go back and do the deep digging of finding the curios in your churches and the identities that make up your students and your volunteers and your parents, and then create something with them that mm-hmm. actually is going to bring to life their curio, their uniqueness. And it's going to look different. It's going to be a different expression. And hopefully it's something that we've never seen before because you found that mixture of your people. And so I just think that we get so quick to just, you know, do this program or this idea looked really cool on Instagram and all these pictures will be awesome. But no, it's going to look unique to your people. And so take that challenge of just digging deep and really finding what that is, and don't settle for somebody else's curio.
That's good. And the other thing is, we say that we are curio. We were going to call it curio design, but like we said, let's call it we are curio. So literally when we say we are curio, we're saying we to our the people that we work with, we're saying we to our staff, the people who we are trying to solve problems for, we together are curio that makes up the company, that makes up the solution. So not just like you're the curio, but like we're all together building this, co-designing together.
Hey, before we start to wrap up, I want to circle back to something you said, Jason. You talked about the word descent. Can you unpack that for our listeners a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, I think descent sometimes has a negative connotation with it. It's like descent means that you're not loyal. You're not with the group. And descent to me has nothing to do with loyalty. You can be the most respectful and loyal and committed team member, but you are dissenting because you want to see the best idea come to life. And we mentioned it earlier that people are sacred and ideas aren't. And so when you put the idea in the center, you want people shooting at this idea. That's the point. You're stress testing that idea. And if people aren't giving their full opinion, their full throated, like, I disagree with that, then there's something wrong with the team, because you want the idea to be the thing that everybody's collaborating on. And when it becomes, you get too close to your ideas, then dissent feels like defection. It's like, you're not listening to my idea. You're not getting behind me. But the point isn't to get behind me. We're getting together around mm-hmm. an idea. So I think to me, dissent really is just about allowing for differences of opinions so that people, so you can get a better, you don't live with blind spots as mm-hmm. much with your idea.
So, good.
So you're saying don't surround yourself with yes people?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
That's so good. Okay. So I would love to know, how can people and maybe organizations get connected with you and We Are Curio?
Yeah, well, they can find us at wearecurio.com. or if they want to connect with us on social media, on Instagram, and we have We Are Curio. And then for Jason and I personally, we have at the DeMeos on Instagram.
We're one of those weird couples with a shared one.
So
we have separate Twitter.
But combined Insta.
Facebook, just one Insta. I don't know why we did it. We're just lazy. It just
happened that way. So, but yeah, so wearecurio.com or find us on social media.
Yeah, we'd love to collaborate with y'all. We've got a lot of ways that we can partner. We do workshops, we do speaking, we can come out and do 2 or 3 day immersive things with your staff. We're out here. Contact us. We love it.
Love to collaborate.
We'll make sure to put some of your contact details in our show notes. So if you're listening and would love to get connected with these guys, the team DeMeo, I like that.
I love it.
And I'm also thinking about shutting down my own Instagram and just going with my wife's now. That's probably not going to happen.
Your Instagram is so good. Don't do that.
It's not going to happen. But we'll leave all those details in the show notes. So if you are listening and you want to, you can just click on the show notes right now and you'll be able to just do one click to contact these guys. Hey, thank you so much, Jason and Hillary. It's been great talking to you. I want to get you out of that bunker now and take all the pillows and put them back on the bed and everything. Hope you guys have a great rest of the day. Thanks for joining us. Well, that was just an amazing interview. I don't know if the listeners could pick up, but you and I were feverishly processing everything they said because
I'll tell you,
it's such an amazing concept, this design thinking idea.
There were multiple times in that interview where I forgot that I was interviewing. Like I was like just absorbing what they're saying and trying to figure out how that works.
Yeah,
and
but the concept is so powerful. I mean, it's all about putting the customer at the center and making them the hero of the story. It's about that idea of not just doing what's expected, but doing what is effective. That, when they were talking about, man, that was the part that I was like, I was fully engaged at that point.
Yeah, it was good.
And Reggie's stuff was incredible as well.
Oh my goodness. So I am still thinking about that clip because I don't know about you, but he mentioned his first sermon that he preached when he was in his 20s. And I really want to hear it.
Yes, because, I want to hear that too.
Right?
Yeah, let's see if we can get a campaign going to hear that sermon.
I mean,
I bet everybody would want to hear it.
I know. I want to see how much he's grown as a communicator because clearly in the clip he was making fun of himself.
Yeah.
So I was also thinking about there are probably a lot of listeners who would love to get rid of curriculum content that they've been given and told that they have to teach because for one reason or another. So I don't know. Reggie made it sound really easy, but I would imagine that's not reality for a lot of people listening.
Yeah. I mean, if you recognize that what you're currently doing is irrelevant, it's time to make that change. It's time to get into design thinking and start, like Reggie said, right? He's talked about being creative and not just being reactionary.
Well, I think what's so hard about it is you can do that in your own ministry, but if your whole church isn't doing that or they're not on board with it, it feels kind of like you're in handcuffs.
Yeah. Totally agree. So how do we break out of that?
Clearly come to the Orange Conference to get aligned. Just kidding.
I love what he said about Sunday doesn't have to be irrelevant or exclusive. Wow. Yeah. Like I tweeted that straight away because that was just ridiculously.
I think that's something that he's done so brilliantly is he's challenged so many of us to rethink what our Sunday looks like. Like I love when he said, you have to imagine somebody's Monday before you can reimagine Sunday. And I really feel like that is so key.
Yeah.
And it sounds simple, but it's not at all.
Yeah, and that only happens when we start having this human-centered, this customer-centered approach to what we do.
It is, and you know, that is evidence of something else he said when he talked about it's so easy to drift into becoming the kind of church that answers questions nobody's asking. Because if you're not paying attention to the customer, you're not paying attention to their Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, then the things that you're going to be asking or the needs you think you're meeting on Sunday aren't going to be the needs that are needed to be met.
Yeah. And so we need to be doing a lot of rethinking in our student ministry teams, in our family ministry teams, but it stretches across the board as well. You know, one of the things that we're wrestling with at the church where I work is the idea of, you know, do people need to even attend church in order to grow as Christians, to grow in their faith? We live in a world that where innovation means we can access messages anywhere. Like people listening to this podcast right now just accessed an interview that they weren't part of and a message from a person they weren't in the room during that message. So innovation is always changing. And how do we as the church change to that innovation to make sure that the gospel is still being presented effectively?
You know who is really, really good at this?
Who?
You.
Oh, gosh.
Dave, I'm serious, because there is no better person to talk about what the future of the church looks like and reimagining that than you, because I know you've been trying and experimenting with new things.
Yeah, well, you know, I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, I mean that too.
But that's what it's all about. And this is what my encouragement would be to everybody who's listening. Experiment. Try different things. Try whatever it takes to be effective. You know, I love what Craig Rochelle says, right? He says, do anything short of sin to get people to hear the gospel. Mm. I think that that's such a powerful idea. And in a world where we have such great technology that helps us be in everybody's pocket, like literally on their phone, we can be in their pocket all day, every day. We shouldn't be sticking to just that 1 hour every Sunday. We need to be focusing on the 167 hours of the week when they're not in church.
And that is a scary thing.
It is. And it takes it takes us being creative and not just reactionary. It has to move us out of the tradition and start being transformative. And that's what I really love.
Say that
about
again.
We have to move from being just in a tradition and start being transformative.
I love that.
Yeah, that's what I got out of this whole episode. So I really hope that you got a lot out of it too. I hope that this is what I hope from this episode, that it doesn't answer questions, but that it raises questions,
yeah,
because we have to keep asking good questions. So I want to encourage all of you who are listening, share this with your team so that you can sit around together and just start asking each other the questions. How do we do this? How do we move the ball forward? How do we become more effective?
Dave,
yes.
I have one last question before we go. Do you know any songs that have to do with Sunday?
No, I don't. Not off the top of my head.
One of my favorite country songs of all time.
Lord, this could go anywhere. Okay, here's what I want to do. I want you to sing us out with this song. So before you actually start it, I'm going to say this. Everybody, make sure you leave a rating and a review on iTunes. It really helps get the word out so that this content can get out to more churches and to more people. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever it is that you're listening to this podcast right now. And also check out the show notes on thinkorangepodcast.com, thinkorangepodcast.com. So I'm going to let Ash sing this out, this Sunday country song, and then we're going to even change the format again. We're not even going to say our regular catchphrase of when you think Next Generation, think Orange. Ash, take it away.
It's what I love about Sunday. Sing along as the choir sways every verse of Amazing Grace. And then you shake the preacher's hand. Go home into your blue jeans. Have some chicken and some baked beans.
Are you making this up?
No. But I can't sing at all. I'm the tune.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Think Orange podcast.
Join us next time for more ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
For more episodes and show notes, visit thinkorangepodcast.com.